Welcome to this edition of the Ute Talk Podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports.
And I'm Joseph Silverzweig. How's everybody doing today?
Hopefully well. We're all recovering from the last loss, including
one of those
players.
Was going to happen, right?
Yeah, it can't be perfect. I mean, they haven't
somebody,
been, but...
Somebody can be, but...
I think we jinxed Colette, but we can talk about that later.
Okay, all right.
Just to start us off. First, we could really use some help with some reviews. Whether you want to go and review on iTunes or Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you listen, we would appreciate it, especially if you could do a 5-star review. If you can't, reach out to us, email us, utetalk@gmail.com, @utetalkpodcast on Twitter, and we could use that help. The other thing is our logo work on Torn by Sports for Ute Talk is done by the famous @DollyLlama on Twitter. Utah fans, you should be familiar with him. I just wanted to give him a plug. One, he's done some great work for us, but his Utah gear is spectacular, and he's got some
beautiful
new coats and polos that he's pre-ordering right now, and I told my wife I was going to drop about $1,000 on his website.
How'd she feel
she
about that?
Profusely told me to stop, so I haven't done it yet, but... Nonetheless,
the prices
if you need
are
some,
good, though. I mean, you spend a lot because you buy everything yourself.
Oh, yeah. You want to buy everything.
I would say competitive with anything.
It's good
anything
stuff.
Yeah.
It's good. I've got several of his shirts. I've gotten, you know, the vinyl stickers on my car, just all that stuff. Just wanted to give Doll a shout out. So it's DollyLlama.com, D-A-H-L, I think E-Llama.
Llama.
Yeah.
Yes.
So go check it out. But let's get into our quick hitters. And as always, we've now put the Kuzma watch back at its spot at the front.
Kuzma watch. Kuzma.
So I don't know. I'm not sure whether Kuzma's recovered from the rookie wall.
No.
He's shooting about 30% from the field.
That's not good. That's not great. That's less than.
I mean, he's playing
50%. Yeah.
Low. Yeah, very good analysis.
The stats, I come with the advanced mathematics, people. 30, less than 50. You're welcome.
Good job. Well,
3 points are high, though. He's 42%, 40%, 33% the last few games. Kind of a saving grace for him.
I mean, ultimately, that's all. His last game, it looks like it was all threes and maybe a free throw.
Yeah.
So
reason free throw.
And but they were playing they've been playing abysmal teams, and that's all he's been able to do. Mavericks, Kings, Hawks. I mean,
he should score roughly
Tank City
a bazillion points. I mean, I could play these teams on NBA Jam and score like 200-300. So I'd be on fire the whole time. On fire. You know what I'm everybody everybody listening to this knows exactly what I'm talking about. And he's not on fire.
No.
But that's okay. It's even if this continues through the rest of the season is how close to over for the NBA.
So they've got about 20 games left or so.
So even if he winds up here 12 points a game, 5 rebounds a game, averaging 32% from 3, that's a heck of a rookie year, isn't it?
No, it's a good rookie year. I mean, it's a solid top 5 rookies. So
yeah. Good for him,
right.
Man. Good for
him.
And I'm sorry, but good for the Lakers with 17th overall draft pick. I'd love to see the numbers on this kind of contribution from that kind of draft pick, although their other earlier draft pick hasn't panned out as well, just to say the least. And wait till he shows up in Lithuania or something like that, and it's a total bust because... Yeah, anyway.
I don't want to go on.
Not Alonzo Ball podcast.
So, a couple things going on in the Olympic sports, shall we say. The men's Pac-12 swimming and diving championships are this week. They're in Washington, I believe it was. Women's basketball is playing Colorado tomorrow. So, that should, you know, go win that Rocky Mountain rivalry game. Men's tennis is going back to my old stomping grounds in Norfolk, Virginia. Going to play ODU and VCU.
What's ODU?
Old Dominion University.
Old Dominion.
Ultimately, their only claim to fame was back when, like, Pat Summitt in Tennessee was having their really good run. Uh-huh. ODU was typically ranked in the top 10 in women's basketball. But, of course, I live there, so I'm probably the only one listening to this podcast that even knows that reference at all. So men's tennis is going by old stomping grounds. Women's softball playing the number 6 team in the country, Texas A&M, on Friday. Baseball is down in Arizona, plays Santa Clara.
Now, is the baseball schedule still the way it was in years past where, like, the first 20 games, yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and it's a lot of
non-conference,
road games, a lot of non-conference games, because look outside. You can't play baseball in the snow. And it's a big issue for cold weather teams. In baseball, you'll notice if you look at who's habitually good, it's not necessarily who you'd expect. They tend to be clustered in the warm weather areas can have a bunch of home games in March. And that's a big advantage and a big part of why Utah's not as competitive in baseball. Although lately, they've been a pretty good team. They had that great series run.
Won the Pac-12 title.
They've got a really bunch of really good players. Oh gosh, I can't remember. Is it Krohn? Jason Krohn. He's doing really good in the
Krohn or Krohn?
Krohn. It could be Krohn.
I don't know. He just recently got traded. I can't remember who he plays for now.
Major
League. He was on the Angels.
Yeah, but he's successful, which is cool.
Baseball knowledge not strong on our podcast. Let's just put it that way.
I follow it less than I used to. I only have so much bandwidth, and I'm pretty in to college football, and it's hard for when I lived in New York. I grew up in New York, grew up a Mets fan, you know, RIP myself, because it's awful being a Mets fan. But less these days, thanks to a number of factors. Chief among them is just I've only got so much time.
Too much baseball, honestly.
162 is a lot of games.
Yeah. Totally agree.
What else we got? Finally, gymnastics. This is interesting.
Gymnastics. You
got
to talk gymnastics. Yeah. So they lost to Cal as a team meet.
But it was over 197 and on the road. So good score. And they're still
they went up in the rankings.
In the RQS.
They went up on the rankings because their RQS went up because it was a road meet and they eliminated one of their lower scores earlier this season. And, you know, they did it without Michaela Skinner. Only did two events.
Did she hurt her fist pumping?
She did not hurt her wrist or hand or anything like
that. She fist pumps
pumping
with some
fist
aggression.
Or punching cougars
and
on the
yes,
mat.
Yes, she punched the cougar and tweaked her elbow. No, she
no,
used her ankle.
She hurt ankle. The good thing is their next meet isn't until Michigan, and I believe that's March 10th. So we got a week or two. And hopefully that ankle can get better. Team can kind of use it. It's a good break. This is a good time to have a break. Rejuvenate if they're doing it. Yeah, kind of like their all-star
break.
Yeah, sure.
In that neighborhood.
It should ultimately, I think it helps them. Their last two meets, I believe, let's hear.
Kind of softening a little bit of some wobbly on the landings. Not as much discipline, not as much focus maybe as we've come to expect.
Yeah, this last two meets, it just hasn't been as crisp. And ultimately, look, they've got two good meets coming up. Michigan at Michigan, and then the week after that, Georgia here in Salt Lake.
And
Georgia,
if you
good.
Don't know, is a powerhouse. I would say the only university that's consistently on a level sort of historically in the sport with Utah. So that's always a one to watch.
Not that I haven't bought my tickets yet, but the Pac-12, or not the Pac-12, the regionals are going to be here in Salt Lake.
Oh, cool.
So
that's exciting.
That should be fun.
And some high quality competition there.
Yeah. So, all right. On to the meat of this conversation, which is basketball. And let's just get the USC game over with. Mm. Right?
It was bad.
Well,
situation.
It was bad.
You think they lost by a substantial margin.
I don't know. I don't feel that bad about it, though. I mean,
I guess
so
I'm not that mad either. Like I said, we've got five games.
Are you
games.
Mad or are you not? What is
no,
it?
No, I mean, I'm not mad, but I am realistic about the quality of the performance.
So I mentioned Bibbins' legs and the fact that he played the whole game against UCLA last podcast, and I was concerned about that and how it would impact finishing the season. – And it clearly impacted it. I mean, Bearfield's out with this rib-related injury. Jace Johnson's battling plantar fasciitis, which is a horrible injury and sucks. And
if you've ever had it, it's just intensely painful.
Yeah.
And it's every time you take a step.
Never mind.
I've heard
jump
like
4 feet in the air.
Stabbing the bottom of your foot.
It's really bad.
Pain.
It's really bad.
It is horrible.
It's
I
one of these
so
things
that
you're like, what even is that? And you think it's not a big deal. And then you talk to somebody who's experienced
it,
and it's pretty horrendous.
It is horrendous.
And the only way to get better is just to stop doing
stuff. Is the rest.
Which brings us to the best thing about the Utes closing schedule in my mind, which is every other team, almost every other team, has two games this week. And Utah doesn't play until
Saturday.
That's a nice long break. Bibbins can drink some Gatorade and eat some Rice Krispie treats. And
well, I mean, that rib injury, I mean, I don't know what it is specifically, but depending on what muscles those are that it's impacting. I mean, it's probably just a moving your arms kind of.
I'm imagining
pain.
They're like interstitial muscles in between the ribs, and all of these things seem like the perfect thing for them is 7 days off. Where hey, we don't
be
need
great.
To practice. For
these are rest days.
Everybody can just chill, and so it's just really good timing. And Utah is. It's hard to believe this because you all watch the game against Colorado where the Utes got worked. But Utah is statistically over the course of the season a much better team than the Buffaloes. I mean, by a major margin. And there isn't really a reason to expect this game to be competitive, provided the Utes are healthy. Yeah, and again,
well,
it's the last
caveat,
game
right?
of the season. It is a rivalry game, whether we want to admit it or not. But so it will be competitive, and these are guys who want to win, and they will come to compete, but from the advanced metrics perspective, you would expect 8-12 point victory at the inside, and maybe bigger than that. So really, from my super wonky why even bother watching the games, I have a spreadsheet perspective, it shouldn't be close, and I think probably it will be closer than
I
expect, especially given what we saw with the matchup dynamics when they were on the road. But at home, been playing at a consistently higher level game in, game out than the Buffaloes, and I'm really optimistic about this win. And that's a good thing because you do the math, and guess what? Win, and they're in, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not. Let's correct the win and they're in. So what are we talking about? Are we talking to the NCAA? Are we talking about the first round bye?
Win, and
they're
into the bye.
Right, and we want the bye. They get the bye. I mean, I like the way Larry K or Andy Hill? I'm sorry. I was listening to Coach's show, and they were talking about this team and their confidence versus facing anybody in this conference. And they should be confident to play any of them.
They have went toe-to-toe or are objectively superior to every team in this conference. Even the ones you'd think would be a lot better, they've lost by a point or one.
I mean, ultimately, I would just like USC on. I would prefer they be on the other side of the bracket.
Yes, USC seems to have a persistent. How many S's did I add to that? A persistent advantage that transcends luck.
I mean, granted, if we had Bearfield and Bibbins wasn't on empty, and Rawson wasn't on empty, and Collette wasn't.
That's true.
Keep staying in foul trouble and stuff like that. I think this team would have done better against USC. I mean,
but when you see a margin of 16.5 points on average over the two games, they lost by 17 and 16.
Right.
And then you add players in, you start changing factors, and you can say, well, maybe we can get 5 or 6 or 7 or maybe even 8 points on average by adding this or changing that. But if there really is a 16-point gap between those two teams, that's not the kind of gap you close with, Bibbins hits a few shots. It's
well, I mean, I think I'm just going to drink the Kool-Aid of what the Utah coaches are filling my glass with, right? So Larry Kruskovia could not stop talking about the 5 missed layups to start the game. You make 5 more layups, and this is a 6-point game you're talking about.
And let's look at the
right.
And then so, I
Let's see the
how big of a deal. I don't know. He's Chris Kubiak's owning the layups right now, and by all means, own the layups. But I will tell you this: I've never seen like the Utes were clearly just gassed. And yeah. Let me be Captain Obvious here. I mean, go. Yeah, I just don't.
I mean, they got to within six with 12 minutes to go. They were within.
Right. Well, they had
eight, nine, 12
minutes go. USC calls a timeout. The Utes proceed to give up two backdoor alley oops. I mean, that is just.
Yeah, 13. Then they're down 62 to 49 here with seven.
And then, I'm pretty sure Larry got his technical. 71 to 49,
it just got worse and worse.
Yeah, it blew up after that timeout. Timeout, two alley-oops, a bunch of missed calls when Collette was at the hoop, and then Larry K got his technical, and that game was over. I mean, it was like a quick little two-minute segment, and then that game was over.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what happened. The team was just, you know, it was ultimately, I think they were exhausted, and there had been that huge momentum swing, and the game was over.
And yeah, the numbers and the trend of the game just backed up that they were never really, I wouldn't say they were competitive past maybe the first 5-10 minutes of the game, which would.
Well, where was that big swing? That
let's
was,
see. So Larry K's with 12-11 left in the first half, that's when SC took the lead. Then right. They were up four. Then they were up seven. So it was with about 12 minutes left in the first half, and it really never looked back from that. And so, I mean, yeah, the first layups, that's bad, but and not something that you want to have happen. But if you're looking at the sort of trajectory of the game from a scoring margin standpoint, it looks like something happened about halfway through the first half, and it just wasn't competitive after that. And that's consistent with they just didn't bring the endurance that they needed to play the whole 48 minutes, which is understandable given the emotional and physical energy they've been putting into it. And when we were talking about this 2 weeks ago, this stretch here, we said, look, this team isn't really good enough to win five games in a row.
Yeah,
but they are good enough to go 4-1 if they can beat Washington, if they can beat one of UCLA and USC, and they've done both of those things. And now we've got everything on the line at home, all the marbles against Colorado, who they're better than. I mean, they've got better basketball players than Colorado does. So, and a nice big long rest, like you said, when a lot of the problems they've been having are rest-related. It's a good situation, and I'm pretty excited about it. And I tell you, this is not a conversation I had the slightest expectation that we'd be having now.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought we'd be talking about, are they going to be a 6 or a 7? Maybe they can squeak out a win, and then we'll see about their NIT seeding.
Right.
But this is a solid 3 or 4 conference wins better than I thought they were going to be. I thought they were going to drop one or two they shouldn't have. I didn't think they were going to beat Oregon. I didn't think they were going to beat UCLA. I didn't think they were going to beat ASU. I mean, those are good wins. And it's been particularly the second half of the conference season has been really exciting and heartening in terms of both the immediate and the longer-term future.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, whether you like Larry K or not, or especially their scheduling, is early season non-conference scheduling. If you want to know what your expectations for this team should be based on the coaching staff, you can look at that non-conference schedule, see it's extremely weak, and know that this your expectations should be pretty low. And
yeah. They'll tell you. They say, look, if we're playing
Prairie
something or other, which, by the way, look it up, is a beautiful, beautiful university that's just tucked away in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
It's really pretty.
I'm going to take your
word
for it.
No, it's cool. It's a nice place.
Okay.
I totally go. No, I wouldn't. I would never go there. But
I go there for a
yeah, you get this big signal at the beginning of the year when they say, look, we're playing 17 garbage teams.
Yeah.
And you know what they expect, and you should set your expectations based on their expectations, because Larry Griskoviak knows more about basketball than you. And that's true. That's not,
yeah,
no, I don't think there's a listener out there who can credibly say, And if there are, we'd love to have you on as a guest, because that would mean you have pretty awesome knowledge. Like, well, I played in the NBA and I was an NBA coach and a college coach. Come on, have a chat with us. We'd love to have you. Larry Kane knows what he's talking about, which, incidentally, Doug Haller released or talked about on Twitter, USA Today Sports, that ranked and released the salaries of the public institutions' basketball head coaches. So USC and Stanford are not on this list. Stanford is going to be near the bottom for this. Mm-hmm. USC is probably close to the top, especially when you consider cost of living and stuff in LA is pretty intense, and they typically have that. But Coach K is second at $3.39 million, which is a heck of a lot of money, behind only our dear friend Steve Miller.
Sean Miller.
Whose salary, I predict, is going to take a precipitous drop in the very near future. But he makes a little bit over $4 million a year. And the question going around is Coach K worth the second or maybe third highest salary in the Pac-12? They're not the second or third best team in the Pac-12.
So first, I don't know what it says in here as far as what the incentives are, if this is with bonuses, anything like that. So I just want to caveat that number. But I personally, I see nothing wrong with the fact that he's the second highest paid coach. I mean, ultimately, I would argue he's probably the best coach in the conference. It, when you take around, I don't know, I think about it, all inclusive, right? Scandal, all that jazz. I feel like Larry K's got the best coach in program all around. Now, some people are going to argue with me as far as, you know, should Altman be higher, because Oregon has consistently been good. But then I think of the, you know, sex assault scandal and stuff that they've had. Yeah. And then, yeah, of course, Sean Miller at Arizona, you know, he's maintained that program without winning a title. But
that's true. Miller hasn't won what you would expect. But, I mean, so maybe when you look at it nationally, that's interesting too. So first of all, in terms of bonuses and incentives, I'm in the USA Today spreadsheet now, and there's a little bit more information. And Coach K's bonuses and incentives are lower than a lot of these other guys. Sean Miller's can get almost a little bit over $1.25 million in bonuses. A lot of these guys are in the threes to fives. Coach K's at 280 as max bonuses and doesn't usually get that many. But he is the eighth highest paid college basketball coach in terms of total pay in the entire country.
Huh.
And that's high. I mean, that's a lot. And I agree in terms of Coach K as a coach. I think he's incredible. And I think all the things he does is incredible. And I think that given the prestige and the just the economics of Utah basketball, we fill up stadiums, you know, fans travel well, there's a lot of income there, there's a lot of marketing and merchandising. I think that from just a pure sort of economics standpoint, as the director of such a large organization that brings in so much money, it's a fair salary. And and then I think relative to his coaching acumen, I think it's maybe a little low. I mean, some of the guys ahead of him obviously should be. The other Coach K at Duke is a legend. And,
well, but
and
hold Coach on, let's Calipari stop a second. A legend.
Bill Self, Tom Izzo, but is Sean Miller a good basketball coach? Or I mean, the suggestion, and there's been a lot of back and forth about this latest ESPN report saying there was wiretap of him or something, and people are saying there isn't, and ESPN has corrected the story a few times. To be honest with you, I haven't followed it closely enough. I'm kind of waiting. I'm going to give it another week. I'm going to see what shakes out and what everybody agrees on. But clearly, the guy is up to his eyeballs in this stuff.
Right.
And he doesn't win titles despite some of the best talent in the country, and he doesn't
develop players particularly well.
So,
and I think when you add those two things together, you say, well, you know, it depends on what you're paying for. I think you should pay a coach for how well he coaches the team and how well he develops players and how good he is for your program and your program image relative to the amount of money you bring in as a school. And I think Coach Chris Kovaliak's salary is commensurate with all of that. I'm comfortable.
See, there's one thing I disagree on you with you, and it's the whole bringing money in. I'm sorry. The youths do not fill up the Huntsman very much. The fans do not travel that well. If you go look at that list of coaches and how high they're paid, I'm sure those are bringing them a lot more money. You know, Duke, obviously, national brand. Heck, they probably have an international brand.
You're right. Like, it's not even close.
Yeah, but that's my problem.
He makes twice what Coach K makes. He makes over $8 million a year.
Right, so, like, but Duke brings in plenty of money.
Probably way more than twice what Coach K makes, yeah.
Indiana, which was close, they're bringing a lot more money, a lot more revenue than Utah is.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, West Virginia with, is it Huggins or Higgins? I can't remember. Higgins. No. Huggins. Huggins. I'm sure they bring in more revenue.
Give him a hug. Is he huggable?
Dude, that dude will punch you in the mouth.
Never mind.
His team. I love his team.
They should call him Bob Punchins.
But, you're right.
You go down this list and you see, like, Missouri gets paid less than him. UCLA, I'm sure, brings in more money. You know, and I keep going Notre Dame. But what I think Coach K has that these other coaches doesn't is a proven track record of developing talent.
No, he does that. Look at this team. Look at this team. That's a great statement.
And I mean, you could make an argument that relative to, and you make the same argument for Coach Witt, right? Is that talent in to output.
Right.
Chris Kovaliak's one of the best coaches in the country. He takes less and does more with it.
Right.
And that's true, definitely true for Whittingham as well. I mean, to an extraordinary degree, to have three first round NBA draft picks in consecutive years when you're recruiting 30, 40, 50th ranked classes. I mean, you're not pulling in guys like Mike, I don't know how to say his name. The other coach, K.
Krasuski? Krasowski?
No. So here's my question. So he's the second highest paid coach in the Pac-12, right? So at that rate, you're getting a high-level coach and a high-level program. What would you like to see changed to rationalize that salary more?
It's the same thing you want to see from football, right? It's a Pac-12 trophy. It's a championship. And it doesn't have to be a national championship.
See, that's not where I would go.
Because there's so much random there. But it's to take the next competitive step within the conference, and I don't think we're there. But
so there's two things I want to see change that I would like Larry K to shift. Or it might be three. One, I don't want to see any more mass exoduses out of the program. No more transfer issues. That's been a problem. Two, end of game situation would be a nice improvement, personally. It's not horrible, but it's not great. And three, I'm kind of sick of, as much as it's an important thing for a coach to manage expectations because that decides how hot of a seat they're sitting in. I would schedule some games in that non-conference schedule.
Pre-conference, out-of-conference scheduling is, and I was saying you kind of know what he thinks, but he should recognize what he's able to build and think higher of the team.
Like Virginia Tech.
Because he keeps coming out and he says, I just didn't think we'd need that much, and I just wanted to get these guys some experience. It's like, go play somebody. I mean, do you remember, this was a few years ago now, but Utah went to Madison Square Garden and played, was it, who did they, was it Duke? They played mm-hmm. Duke, and Jimmy Fallon was there, and he had that conversation. Eventually he had to put the Ute hat on because he was rooting for Duke, and it was awesome. It was so cool. And even had Utah lost that game, it was still like, it felt so good to be there yeah. and to be part of that conversation. And when you look at what Utah achieves on a year-to-year basis and what Utah has achieved historically, they're consistently ranked on a historical level, one of the best college basketball programs ever, you know, top 50 in that range. What the heck are we doing playing Prairie View seven times a year, you know?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's the one thing I want to change.
I wonder if we didn't change that, if it would pull in a few different recruits. And I mean, you get treated like you act like, right? You know, right. You act like you're small time, you get treated like you're small time. And so maybe to go in there and throw some elbows around, which, gosh, Coach K knows how to throw an elbow.
Yeah, don't mess with him.
Take up some more space.
I mean, of a coaching staff, our program, like, if I had to pick a staff to go in a fight with,
oh man,
I want Witt on one side, and I want Chris Govan
right.
on
if
the
you,
other.
If you do college and football pairs, there is nobody you'd rather go into battle with than Coach Witt and Coach K. I mean, those are two seriously intimidating dudes. I don't know how Coach Witt's not actually that big of a guy. He gives off this aura, but mm-hmm. You know,
well,
there's a reason
calves.
That despite being a yes, the Cavs,
the
right, but despite being a successful college football player, there wasn't anything ever in the NFL. It's because he's not big enough. And but man, it's hard to even have a two-word conversation with that guy without sweating. Like, he's a very, very intimidating person. And Coach K is similar, but he's also he's tall and he looms mm-hmm. and he gets his face really close to you when he talks to you.
And it's really red.
Yeah, it's intimidating, man. They're both they're intimidating guys, and I do not envy the football players for having to roll with that. And I think about Coach Witt's sons when they're on his football teams and what it must be like to have just a guy like that for a dad who is probably pretty demanding, right? And maybe not warm as you might like in a dad. And then you go and he's also your football coach. That would be hard.
I don't know him very well. But I think he's a little bit different as a dad.
And I don't mean to impugn him as a dad, but I mean, you are who you are, and he's pretty intimidating in every mm-hmm. circumstance.
All right. Well,
I like him though. Don't get me wrong.
Is there anything else you'd like to hit on today?
Algorithms. We already talked about algorithms,
but
let's hit on again.
Reviews.
Come on, guys.
Always helpful.
Five stars. You can do it.
Or at least reach out to us and tell us what you want to hear. I mean, we can't improve, but
we can
don't
talk
know.
More gymnastics if you want.
We could do
a whole hour on swimming. I don't think we could fill an hour on swimming. We don't
honestly
know anything about it.
I'm hungry. I think I'm ready to go get some lunch.
Okay. All right, guys. Go Utes.
Talk to you next week. Go Utes.